Welcome to Setting Up Shop Phase 1, the Entrepreneurial Journey. This is Nona Jordan, and I'm here with Master Coaches Chris Brandt and Jennifer Voss. This recording is going to cover the basics of getting started with a coaching business. Now, one of the most common reactions to this particular class is complete overwhelm. There is really no easy way around this because coaching is not only a discipline, but it can also be a business. So a few things worth noting as we go into this recording. You don't need any of the material given in this module to coach, but rather this material will help you develop a coaching practice. These are two very distinct skill sets. Having a successful coaching practice can also take many different forms. For example, coaches in private practice, coaches in the context of an existing profession, and coaching professional clients. So therefore, when the company hires the coach to coach an employee. Also, becoming a successful coach doesn't necessarily mean having a standalone practice. And also, being a coach doesn't have to mean starting from scratch. So your other MBI life coach training courses are going to address the art and science of coaching and will help you refine where your heart is as it relates to showing up in the world as a coach. This course is meant to offer support and guidance as it relates to creating the infrastructure you will need to support the coaching business and ideas from those who have gone before you on growing and developing your clientele. So we're going to begin with Jennifer. So Jennifer, can you start us off with your really beautiful framework around setting up shop to support a coaching practice?
Of course. How I view my coaching business is similar to a human being or a body with a heart, a soul, a skeletal system, a support system. And like Nona suggested, there are other classes in your life coach training course that will talk about kind of the heart and soul of your business, the soul being why. Why are you drawn to coaching in the first place? Why do you want to practice the tools? The heart is how you bring the soul of your business to life. What strategies do you choose? Do you want to do one-on-one coaching, or do you want to do something beyond, like workshops or teleclasses or public speaking? That's the heart and soul. The skeletal support system is what I view as the setting up shop class. It's the support system underneath your practice, underneath the heart and soul, that will help support you and your clients as you move forward. Because if you set up shop, if you set up a practice or a business, you want support systems that will help support you so that you're not always working on your business. You're working within it, and it's helping support you as you support your clients. So that's how I view this, is that if you think about your body, you only have as many bones as you really need to. A lot of people will sell you systems, support systems, things like that, but you actually might be way too complex for a simple startup, standalone coaching practice. So I would suggest really looking at everything you employ or deploy within your business as, will it actually support you, or is this something that somebody said you should, quote-unquote, be doing to help you? Really keeping things simple at the beginning, and I'm several years into this, and it's still really simple. Keeping things as simple as they can be, yet robust enough to support you. And then you build the muscle around that as you grow. You might add a scheduler, or you might add a different kind of support system as you grow, but starting really simple, to me, is one of the keys.
Absolutely. I love that. Yeah. I love that. Beautiful. Thank you. Now, Chris, do you have any thoughts that you would like to add to that?
Well, I very much second what Jennifer said. It's really about keeping it simple, and it's so easy for cadets in the course, you know, kind of to piggyback on what you said, Nona, about the overwhelm factor. Mm-hmm. You're in this training, you're learning all these things. Every week you're being given new information and new tools to practice and use. And, oh, my gosh, now it's time to set up a practice. I do, it sort of comes in the flow for us to help you start thinking about it. But very often, everybody starts seeing posts that say things like, well, I have a graphic designer, and I'm going to start my website, and I've already gotten my business cards printed, and I have a logo, and I'm thinking that I need a social media campaign. And what do you use for your newsletter? And you can kind of feel the lizard start to go, oh, no, oh, no, oh, no, I haven't even thought about any of this yet. And so I really encourage you to take Jennifer's advice to heart and keep it simple. What you really need in order to coach is another person who wants to have a conversation with you.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. You know, then you start building the structure, right? Then comes the phone. Maybe you decide to add that so that you don't have to worry about where to meet someone. Or maybe you add a one-page, you know, just a blog or, you know, what have you, some way of communicating. Maybe it's a brochure, just one little piece of communication. And then you start thinking about broadening that. But do what feels comfortable for you. If you really aren't feeling the need to write, well, then don't start with a big communications campaign just because somebody thought it was a good idea to use AWeber or Constant Contact.
Mm.
You know, just always honor what feels good to you. But also remember that you're going to be a little afraid, probably, and that fear isn't necessarily going to weigh. Be a little uncomfortable, but don't be massively uncomfortable as you think about how to start all this or take some turtle steps to do so.
Right. Yeah, absolutely. So I think you brought up something really interesting there. You know, the elements that you really need to coach, you know, another person willing to have a conversation and yourself, you know, at a particular time and in a particular place. And I think that leads really nicely into, you know, workspace. You know, that's a big question that comes up right from the beginning, where you're going to coach your clients. So, Chris, can you speak a little bit to the basics of creating an environment that facilitates that conversation that you mentioned just a minute ago?
Sure. I think the biggest thing to remember is quiet, both
right.
in yourself personally, meaning you as the coach, really sort of, you know, clearing out your own thoughts, doing your own work so that you are that place of peace, you are that container, that space into which a client can bring whatever needs bringing up and talk about whatever needs talking. Then go out another circle. What around you is quiet? Are you, if you decide that you're going to work with somebody over the telephone, make sure that the room you're sitting in is quiet. And the reason I bring this up, it might sound obvious, but recently I saw a post on one of the discussions where a cadet was saying that they have two very small children at home, and one of the reasons they were drawn to this idea of coaching was because they could do it with small children in the house. And I said, I'm not saying you can't. You might just need to put a sign on the door that says, Mommy's working, and unless you're bleeding, you need to keep the door shut. But all that kidding aside, it really is about how can you create peace? Because remember what, you know, when Martha always refers to the Hafiz poem about troubled, then sit by me, for I am not. Create a trouble-free environment, a peaceful environment. If you do decide to meet your clients, some people will invite clients into their homes. I didn't choose to do that, but some people do. Again, make sure nobody's running around, banging the doors, phones ringing, all that sort of stuff. If you're going to meet in a public place, check spaces out in advance. When I started out, I met people in Starbucks, Panera, but I always tried to do it at off hours. There's not really an off hour at a Starbucks, unfortunately, and all those machines make a lot of noise. So Starbucks fell off the list pretty quickly. But I, for example, had a Panera Bread that I would meet someone at around, you know, 8, 9 in the morning, maybe 10, not at lunchtime, not at the dinner rush, but there were these booths that were really quiet, set off to the side, where I felt like it was private and quiet enough. And some people, even after a couple sessions, would say, you know what, I think I want to switch to the phone because I'd prefer to feel like if I need to cry, I won't be sitting in a booth in a Starbucks doing it, or a Panera and doing it. So that's the kind of stuff that I kept in mind. It's really about starting with quiet and peace and sort of rippling outward in terms of your environment and the environment that you help create for your client.
Beautiful. Beautiful. I love that. Absolutely. So, Jennifer, do you have any thoughts to add to that as far as gear, where, you know, like how you can support that quiet in the office space?
The only thing that I would add is that I have on occasion, met with clients when I've been traveling, which has meant either a hotel room, where sometimes cell phone coverage can be tricky. But when that happens, I'm always very, very open with the client and tell them I'm not going to be on my landline, I'm going to be on my cell phone. I'm not going to be in the normal environment that I'm in. And I ask their permission. I'm always just DAO. You know, is it okay if, you know, if I'm on a cell phone, if we drop off, is that okay? One time I have met on the side of a road in a rental car because I was stuck somewhere. But I opened the call at very TAO and said, hey, I'm on the side of the road in Scottsdale, Arizona. It's very remote, not a whole lot of traffic. It's relatively quiet. But I will be happy to reschedule if you've got a problem with that. And it was not a deep square one type coaching client. We were working on her business, and it wasn't somewhere where we could get, you know, the line drop when we were in the middle of some great tearful revelation or anything like that. So, but TAO, if I'm ever caught, or if you're ever caught not in your natural quiet environment.
One of the other things that you talked about was how do you sort of set up some of the gear. So I think, you know, the biggest thing, that's another thing people can get really tripped up on, is I have to have the latest technology and I have to have all sorts of, you know what, I have a cordless Panasonic phone, like my house phone, that has a little jack on the side of it for a headset. My headset is from, I think, Radio Shack. Wrap it over my head and it's got a mouthpiece that comes up near my mouth. And that's pretty much my technology for a phone call. Obviously, same as with Jennifer. You know, if I'm using my cell phone or if I'm traveling, that's how I go. And I've actually done sessions on Skype as well. But that's, you know, that's the biggie. I don't think you need a fax machine anymore in this day and age. People usually scan and sign documents if you're having them complete anything, like an agreement where they have to sign something, or just a Word document if you're doing anything with intake forms and things like that. But, keep it simple.
One thing that just popped into my mind about phones and technology is that a lot of people in the Martha Beck world have very strong energy. It may sound woo-woo, but I have learned to believe this after I have fried many, many phones, where the conversation will get very deep and there'll be an energetic connection and phone lines will drop. So just don't be surprised with that. Skype, I can use Skype sometimes, but again, I have a corded phone for this very reason.
Interesting.
Old-fashioned corded phone because I was frying cordless headsets.
That happens on the group calls sometimes too, yeah.
It does. It happens. So, again, TAO with the client, just heads up.
Yes, absolutely. That's great. That's a really good piece of information, because I have also gone through countless headsets that I've blown out. So, absolutely.
I keep a spare headset at all times. I always have an extra headset. Yeah.
That is such a good idea. No doubt about it. So when we're talking about inviting people into the coaching relationship, Chris, you touched briefly on intake forms. So let's talk about the process of welcoming new clients into a coaching relationship, because there can be a lot of confusion and angst around this as well. So, Jennifer, how do you welcome new clients into your practice?
Oh, absolutely. And I will start out by saying there multiple ways to skin this cat, so to speak. Mm-hmm. Go with your body compass. Go with what feels good for you. I'll share with you how I vet new clients or invite new clients in, and then you can take it, and the other master coaches, you can ask them that are teaching this class too, you know, what are their processes, and try things out until it feels good to you. The process that I use is I have an intake call with all potential new clients so that I can talk to them, feel their energy, see if we're a fit. I offer that at no cost. And before that intake call, I will send a little pre-work kind of questionnaire, and it's very simple. What are the three things you would most like to get from a coaching relationship? And if I had a magic wand, what are the three wishes that I could grant you? Sometimes those answers are different, so I do ask both questions. But it's very simple, so I know what the issues are that the potential client is coming with. So I have an idea, and some of the work, I don't have to spend a lot of this 30-minute intake call just with the gathering information. So if we feel like we're a fit, there are three things then that I send the client. One is an intake form, which I believe you're getting, everybody in this class is getting a package of sample intake forms from your different instructors. Intake form that they can sign, scan back, that is basically giving them kind of my rules of business, so to speak, and saying this is not therapy, has all that language in there. They sign that back, and I expect to get that back before our first session. The second is a link to my scheduler so that they can make an appointment, and the third is an invoice. And the invoice, I don't want to be in the collection business, so I expect to be paid prior to our first call. And usually once we've made it past the initial pre-consult call, getting those three things back is not a big deal. So that's my process that I use.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That's great. That's very similar to the process I use as well. And yes, there are multiple ways to do this. Chris, do you have any other thoughts about how you welcome clients into your practice?
Jennifer's basically covered it, although I do not use a sort of a pre-consult form. I just have the call, because usually when they're contacting me, they're either, in this case now, I don't have my phone number on my website anymore, so they're using the contact me form on my website or they're emailing me, excuse me, and quite often they're writing down whatever it is that's brought them to me, and I can usually feel the energy off of that. Mm-hmm. And then, but obviously, I too offer a complimentary call. And then I send out a link to my scheduler as well. I have a form. The way I frame my coaching agreement is, here's what you can expect of me as your coach, and here's what I expect from you as my client. And I talk about the same kinds of things Jennifer mentioned. And mm-hmm. But when I say what I expect from you, it's you show up ready to work, be transparent and authentic and open with me. If you're on any medications or seeing a therapist, please make me aware of that, those sorts of things, as well as this is my policy with regard to cancellation of sessions and notifying me, things like that. I don't send an invoice, but I think that's a wonderful idea, Jennifer, and I'm stealing that.
I was in the collection business in my prior life,
and didn't want
to do that anymore.
Absolutely.
But I ask that they pay me before we start. I just never thought to send them an invoice to get that started, so that's a great idea.
Yeah. One thing to add is that when I first started coaching, some of what I said is kind of the muscle that I added around the skeleton. Mm-hmm. Later, when I started out, really I had a pre-consult call and I had an intake form. Those were the things that I started with. I did a lot of emailing back and forth, and did not have automated invoices, did not have an automated scheduler. So I started much simpler, and I've added those things as I felt comfortable adding them. So
same here.
Just,
same here.
You know, I use FreshBooks to send invoices. I used to just simply use PayPal. So, again, start simple and add as it feels comfortable. I resisted, actually, schedulers for a long while, and then finally
that's
when where it now works for me. So,
and
again,
just,
add as you feel comfortable adding.
And out of curiosity, you know, which schedulers do you two use?
I use Time Trade.
Okay, and that's what I use too.
I use Acuity Scheduling.
Okay.
Although I find it's a little simplistic, and I've actually been open to looking into other ones, so I've been asking that question of people as well. One thing I will add is I think there's a really important theme here that I want to kind of reiterate, and that is we all, I can't speak for Nona, but I'm assuming it's going to be the same for Nona, is all three of us have likely started somewhere and then changed things, added things, you know?
Oh, never.
My website is in its fifth iteration in 7 years, and it's well overdue for another change. I think I'm on my fifth business card, you know? So just know that as you're building all this stuff, be very open to change and to, you know, seeing what works, feeling what works, feeling what doesn't feel so right. Even my intake form, I think, is on its third iteration at least. Mm-hmm. So, you know, just remember that.
Testing and trying, right?
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Square three.
Yeah, for sure.
Yes. So we touched a little bit on the process of receiving payment, but I want to bring this home because, you know, we go into the business of coaching to generate income. You know, yes, we want to do work we love, but one of the most important pieces is getting paid, in my opinion. So I want to talk a little bit about receiving payment from the get-go. And we talked about it a little bit, but let's just really pull that out and talk about it. So, Chris, can you talk a little bit about the evolution of receiving payment, or, you know, how you do that?
Sure. It started really simply when I first started coaching. First, I was coaching for free. Then when I started coaching for money, people would write me checks or hand me cash. And I didn't even have any kind of a system worked out yet. I was just saying thank you, and they didn't get a receipt or anything from me. But I knew pretty quickly that that wasn't going to work for long. And I started using QuickBooks. And when I was doing it that old way, I was recording information on a spreadsheet so that I'd have it for my accountant, but I really needed to get something a little more sophisticated. So I went with QuickBooks, and I actually had the software on my computer at first. And I took a QuickBooks class at the Women's Business Development Council, which was a great organization that supported women entrepreneurs in Connecticut. And many of you will have those in your area, because there are many organizations like that that receive grants from the Small Business Association. So always know there are lots of different organizations that support entrepreneurs or solopreneurs in around the country. So something to keep in mind. But I digress. Anyway, back to QuickBooks. So I started using QuickBooks, and I would produce either an invoice that I would email them, or I would, if they wrote me a check or then used PayPal buttons on my website, I would submit or I would send them a receipt after they'd paid me. So, you know, either or. Typically, it's a receipt because they're usually just sending me money via one of those two methods. And this is one of the areas where I'm actually thinking about possibly shifting some stuff around. PayPal's fine. It's simple. It's easy. But I don't love those buttons on my website. So I'm going to start doing some research into shopping carts and things like that. But I've been lazy about that one because it's kind of boring to do that stuff.
Hey, now.
Well, I'm being TAO.
Okay.
I need someone else to set it up for me. Maybe it's time to hire a VA. I don't have a VA.
There you go. Have a VA just make new buttons for you.
There you go.
Cool. Great. So, Jennifer, do you have any additional thoughts you'd like to add about taking payment?
PayPal is still what I use as far as it links into FreshBooks. FreshBooks, again, is how I send out all of my invoices. I do not have buttons on my website because I don't want people randomly that I have not done an intake session with. I don't want somebody just paying me for a session assuming that I have openings. So I don't put PayPal buttons unless it's a workshop. But for just my one-on-one clients, I send them an invoice ahead of time. I usually sell packages of three sessions. I have single sessions and three sessions. That's as complicated as I get, and send them an invoice and have them pay. Some clients do send checks, which is perfectly fine. And I did from the beginning set up a separate bank account for my business so that I could make the deposits straight into a business checking account. Just, you don't have to do that, but it to me made it more fun because I was treating my business like a business. And so when I started accepting payments, I started tracking everything like a business. It has its own little personality and its own, again, like soul and heart, and I wanted to give it its own checking account. And so I did set all that up from the beginning.
I did too.
Yeah.
Yeah, I set up a business checking account as well as a business credit card. And just one note, When I set up the business checking account, I don't know if you ladies ran into this, but I needed to have a federal employer identification number. You can use your Social Security number, but if you have a company, they're going to want to know the ID number for that company to set up a business checking account.
Yes, absolutely. Absolutely. And you can do that free through the IRS. Yes. Absolutely. Absolutely. That's great. And I want to reiterate that I think one of the really important things, and Jennifer kind of touched on this because she was in collections and I too was in accounting, but like you get to set the parameters of payment. And I just decided from the very beginning that I was only going to accept payments electronically and that that was going to happen before the first session. And, you know, when your energy is clear around that, people don't tend to mess with it.
Yeah, I've not had, honestly, any problems.
I haven't either. Yeah, but I've had clients, who do have trouble with that. And so, you know, they're like, but that person didn't pay me. I'm like, oh, well. So, I mean, I think that just being very clear that this is how the business works and, you know, I accept payment in these ways and I need to have payment beforehand. You get to do that. So, great. So speaking of tax identification numbers and contacting the IRS, Jennifer, this can be something that happens down the road, but it's definitely something that I think coaches who want to be in business for themselves need to think about is the idea of how are you going to structure your business? So could you speak a little bit to the types of ways that people can structure their business and also how you have your business structured and why?
Sure. Yeah. You can start out as a sole proprietorship, which is just, you know, a one-person mom-and-pop operation. It's not a separate legal entity. In all of these situations that I'm going to talk about, a sole proprietorship, an LLC, or an S-corporation, the taxes flow straight through to your own individual tax return. But with a sole proprietorship, you don't have to set up anything separate, so to speak. So you can start coaching and report the income without having to jump through any legal hoops. I, on the other hand, did set up an LLC. It has its own federal tax ID number. Because when you set up an LLC or an S-corporation, both are flow-through entities. They both flow through to your individual tax return. But what you get are tax ID numbers, like Chris mentioned, to where you can set up a business checking account. You get a little bit of protection. Different states have different rules around different corporate structures. But I live in Tennessee, and my counsel, I used to live in Alabama, lives in Alabama, and he recommended, and I'll come back to this in a second, but he recommended setting up an LLC to have a little bit of protection. Our personal assets would then be protected because we have other family businesses and such. So taking your own individual situation into account, the state that you live in or the country that you live in into account, and check with your advisors I would highly, highly recommend that, because what I choose to do might be different than what you choose to do simply because of where you live or your personal situation. So I chose to set up an LLC for those reasons. And I also chose a fun name. You don't have to be all professional with your LLC names. My LLC name is Feels Like Freedom LLC, because when I left the corporate world, that was the feeling state that I always wanted to have, was freedom. That's what I named my LLC. So you don't have to, it's not even what my website's called, so you don't have to get all wrapped around the axle as to what you're going to call it. You can go ahead and set it up if you so choose. They're relatively inexpensive, but there is some cost that comes to having a corporate entity. But again, that's going to vary by state. That's the simplistic version. An S corporation is the same as far as tax flow goes, but you can pay payroll and things like that out of an S corporation. Well, you can pay payroll out of LLCs too, but it's just a different type of corporate structure. Most coaches that I know either are sole proprietors or LLCs. So there are a few S corporations out there, but Nona, I hesitate to go into any more detail because really and truly, the biggest point that I'd like to make is that everybody either check with your tax accountant or if you know an attorney that knows about your state, your city, county, state, country regulations, that you get advice based on your situations, your family circumstances, and where you live.
I completely agree. And I want to throw something in here, too, because I think it's important. When I was speaking with the tax people, and we move a lot. So, mm-hmm. I mean, we move a lot. And so when I was looking into all of this, I was told by the tax person I was working with that until you get to about $80,000 of net income, there's no tax benefit to becoming an S-Corp.
Right.
So I think that's really important to keep in mind. So complicating things by becoming a corporation, you just don't have to do it for a while.
Right.
And I will also
Actually, I make more than that now.
Mm-hmm.
And my tax accountant has still not recommended. He's like, you just don't need to complicate things and become an S-Corp.
Right.
Still.
Right.
You have to do certain things with an S-Corp that you don't with an LLC, like file minutes and, you know, keep records in a different way. And, again, I won't go into all the details, but it just adds a little bit of level of complexity that I'm not sure we really need in this business.
Right.
To your
right.
point, Anna.
Yeah, and I will add that I had actually filed. We lived in Italy when I started my practice, and then we moved back to the States, and I decided to go ahead and file as an LLC. And did that in the state of Virginia, and then we moved, and then we moved again. And I actually recently dissolved my LLC because I was like, this is making me crazy, because my LLC was in Virginia, but that was two states ago. And so I was like, you know what, until we're living in one place, I'm not going to go there because it's too complicated for me to try and keep track of mail. And then the state gets confused because I don't live there, but my state. Yeah. So just, I say that only because it's like simplicity is your friend.
Yes.
So, okay, Chris, do you have anything to add about business structure, how you've structured your business?
Well, I feel really compelled, and I know this is kind of funny to say, but I feel compelled at this moment to just say to the people who are listening to this call to just take a moment and breathe. Because I suspect that you started to hear us throw around lots of terminology.
Corporate people that worked in financial departments talking about legal stuff.
You know, you've got a couple people on the phone who are going, my S-Corp, my LLC, my tax flow through, and you're going, ah! So I'm just going to own that and say, okay, everybody breathe for a second. And I, too, come out of the corporate world, but came out of the HR side. And I can do a budget with the best of them, but, oh, man, that stuff just makes me nuts. So here's how I did it. I, too, have an LLC. Because part of me is a quick start and part of me just gets bored with some of that stuff, I have a dear friend who's an attorney. He actually happens to also have been a former boss. And he had his own legal practice set up as an LLC by using an organization called Incorporate.com. Now, I am not suggesting that you use them and not seek the advice of counsel or tax professional, but I'm just offering that as an option. I used them because it made it very simple for me. There were three different, they sort of laid out the state-by-state things that you needed to know if you were a resident of pick a state here. And they worked well for me. So I incorporated through them, and I, you know, the LLC, I really struggled with finding a business name for myself for a while because I wanted to find something catchy, and Jennifer has all the creativity in that department. I love that name, by the way. Feels Like Freedom is perfect. But I really, everything I tried was just Google searches, and everything was just resulting in somebody already took it. So I started with Christina C. Brandt LLC. And I always told myself that I would change it to a DBA, you know, doing business as, with some much more fun name if I could think of it, and I just never did. And quite honestly, I have so many different streams of income besides coaching that having an LLC with that name actually serves me well. Although, I will say that, you know, just to kind of go into that tax thing for a minute, one of the reasons that you incorporate is to create a bit of a veil, a liability protection in the sense that your personal assets become separate from your business assets, and if they are held under the LLC or whatever other kind of corporation, you have that protection. having the name Christina C. Brandt LLC is pretty darn close to me, the person, Christina C. Brandt. So I really ought to change the name at some point, and probably will. It's another thing on my list of things to do.
One more thing to throw out, and I don't want to make it complicated, but I have had a client before whose state that she lived in charged for the LLC that she created, but then she created a DBA, and they also charged for that.
Yes, I've heard that too.
And that's a bummer.
And I've just moved from Connecticut to North Carolina, so I'm investigating all that stuff now all over again. I sympathize with you, Nona, having to keep doing it.
Yeah. So simple. And the best people I have on my left hand and my right hand are my tax guy and my attorney.
Yeah.
They did all the work for me because as far as researching and knowing what I needed to do, I kept it simple in that way too, Chris, is to me it was worth it knowing that they were there and they had my back and I was doing it right.
Yep.
And if there are ever any questions with my taxes, my tax guy's there, and I rarely ever have to call my attorney for anything, but he's there. He's a friend. He's a friend of our family. So, yeah, have your own little counsel available.
Well, you know, Pam Slim calls them the Council of Jedi Knights, right? Mm-hmm. You're always going to have advisors. None of us does this alone, whatever this is. Mm-hmm. And I think in the case of a coaching practice, that's good advice, too. It's just, you know, understand that there's lots to know. You can get really overwhelmed. Take another deep breath if you need it.
Mm-hmm.
And remember that there are people who can help you with this stuff.
Yes, absolutely.
And it's not something that you need to think about right this second.
Exactly.
Right.
It's just not. So, great. Wonderful information. And I love it that you encouraged everybody to breathe because, yes, this stuff really amps up people's lizards.
Yeah, for sure.
So let's just finish it out here by talking about how you knew it was that it was time to take the next step in your coaching practice, Chris. So when did you know that it was time to take that next step? And that makes it sound really linear, which it's not. So.
Yeah, you know, it's so funny. You can even say, well, what's the next step? So I'll kind of go back to the turtle steps, right? You know, we've talked about some of them along the way where, for example, oh, this intake form feels kind of stale to me. I want to do something with it. I'm going to change that up. Or, you know, maybe it's time to have a logo or kind of a consistent look and feel. I'll do that. Or maybe it's, well, now maybe I think I need to write to people. Maybe now I'd like to start a workshop in addition to adding workshops as offerings in addition to one-on-one coaching. Or maybe now I'll do this. The common denominator in all of those maybe now scenarios was either, like Jennifer said, there was a factor of boredom or perhaps in my case a little bit of staleness, like it was becoming a little routine. Or I'd feel like, oh, I'm ready. I'm feeling more confident. I'm feeling more excited. I've got this idea. Maybe I could act on that. Or that feels like a natural progression from something that I've already been doing with clients. In the case of workshops and offerings. In the cases of building my business and setting up shop, sometimes it's just been plain old, well, this is becoming cumbersome. There must be an easier way. And after, you know, the 49,000th email of, well, I can't make it Friday at 2. Can you do it Monday at 12? You know, I said it's time for a scheduler. You know, or when I started to receive payments and thought, you know what, I really need to be doing this in some kind of software, you know. So it comes, the going to the next level comes in different ways for me. Part of it is just freshening things up, feeling a little bit excited about something. Part of it comes because I want something to become easier because it's become kind of burdensome or, you know, annoying. And part of it is my body tells me it's yearning for something. Or I feel like something doesn't feel right, and so when I start exploring and experimenting, a la turtle steps and warmer and colder, something else feels better to do. I hope that makes sense, but that's kind of the foundational way that things start to sort of progress forward for me.
Yeah, absolutely. And what I'm hearing most strongly from that, Chris, is that it's not driven by shoulds.
Nope.
Yeah.
Used to be.
Yeah.
When I first started out, it was like, well, everybody else in my class has a newsletter, or, or, well, wow, everybody's got websites. I should And, you know, and then over time, when stuff started to feel icky, I'd go, well, I don't really want to do that. Or, and I do have a newsletter and a website. But I always want to make sure that I'm doing something for the right reason. And the more confident I have become as a coach, the less I've noticed what everybody else is doing.
Amen.
Amen.
So, Jennifer, do you have anything to add about how you recognize it's time for that next evolution?
Chris touched on it. My trend is that I will expand before I streamline something, meaning I will think, oh, I want to do something different, and I'll start adding more of the same to my schedule, which means packing my schedule, which means being very busy. And I was still bored. I'd gotten bored, and what I really wanted was growth and something new and different. But instead of stopping and really paying attention to my body compass and realizing, oh, I'm bored, is I would expand. It's the flip side is actually much more productive. Figure out what you want to streamline first, then figure out where you want to expand. And that way I don't get bored. I don't pack my schedule without kind of looking at it. But
you know,
body compass.
You know what I think is critical to that too, Jennifer or Javo, is just noticing that there might be a little bit of a trust element in there too. Because you think if you just pack more in, you'll feel better. And part of that could be a fear of not making enough money or a fear of, oh, my gosh, I'll have this big block of time that I won't know what to do with, and what if my clients go away? Oh, I raised my prices. Oh, no, nobody will ever pay it. Whatever that change is, there's a trust factor that needs to be there, I think, because it's, you know, it's square three. It's going out into the world and testing something. Mm-hmm. So, as you know, to your point of streamlining, that streamlining creates an emptiness. Think of that space as an opportunity for something wonderful to fill it.
Mm-hmm. Yes, that's an excellent point, because it, a lot of times that space will invoke lizard type activities.
For sure. I know I've filled my stuff, my schedule with all kinds of crap just because I thought it was a good idea.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Fear is a powerful motivator, but it's not always the best one. So.
Right.
Absolutely. Right. And I think that is a beautiful, beautiful place to wrap it up. Thank you, Chris and Jennifer, for your beautiful, beautiful answers and helping our cadets get started with setting up shop and taking their first steps into the entrepreneurial journey. So we are looking forward to talking with you on our call, and thank you so much.